All right, hockey fans, listen up, because we've got something special cooked up for playoff season. It's called the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge, and it's going to add some serious spice to your playoff experience. Now, here's the deal. Every playoff game, you're going to be faced with a handful of questions. It's like your own personal playoff puzzle, and it's free to join. And there are prizes, because who doesn't love winning stuff? Daily winners, you're getting hooked up with gift cards. Treat yourself to some nation gear or maybe even your favorite jersey. And for the big dogs, the people who can win an entire round, it's straight, cold, hard cash. We're talking about real dough for your hockey knowledge. So lace up those skates, stretch those thumbs, and get ready to show off your hockey IQ in the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge. Sign up today and play every game day at games.dailyfaceoff.com and prove your puck prowess.
Welcome to another episode of Dropping the Gloves. Thanks for joining us here. A nice Friday morning. Oh, my goodness. The chickens are laying eggs, Tim. Life already? Is good. Oh, we got seven yesterday.
Nice.
Beautiful. The kids are very excited. I'm going to now transition from the coop to building them a little house so we can put on the driveway. Not a house, but like a little lean-to so they can sell their eggs.
How many eggs do you need to feed your whole family for breakfast?
18?
Yeah.
That's a good break. Because I throw down 5 to 7 myself. And so the other kids, they'll do one, some two. We do the egg in holes.
That's right. So, yeah.
Delicious. So good. If you don't know what that is, I'll just get you up to speed here for our new listeners. An egg in a hole is when you take a piece of bread, mayonnaise both sides, cut a hole in the middle. Usually I use a champagne flute. Luckily, my hands you can't see because I'm like champagne flute, and you take the hole out and then you just throw it in the pan, put a little olive oil in that hole so it doesn't stick. You crack the egg in that hole and you just flip it over and it's delicious. Egg and hole.
Nice.
But anyways, yeah,
cheese?
No cheese. Just salt and pepper and away you go. I have about 4 of those just because the bread is filling. My daughters have about 1. Some have 2. They're It's a labor of love for me. I enjoy them. But anyways, yeah, hopefully we'll get 10 a day. That's the goal. A couple of them are holding out on me. They're still separate, 8 and the 2. They still haven't joined forces yet. We'll see. I actually walked out this morning and I was just thinking in my head, this is honest to God what happened. I had my coffee. I was walking out to let them out of their coop because my automatic door hasn't arrived yet. I'm like, man, it's so nice not to see chicken turds all over the ground. This is nice. And I take another, 10 or 15 steps and I see chickens everywhere. I'm like, what the hell happened? I haven't even let them out of the coop yet. How are they wandering around and out of the fence? Lo and behold, they knock through the door that we had there that the kids set up the night before. They knocked over the ramp that gets them out of the coop. The ramp took down a part of the fence and they were just roaming, loving life. They were very excited. So I had to get the kids to round them up and throw them back in the cage. So mind you, cage, it's 100-foot. Diameter. So it's a lot, big area. But anyway, someone commented on one of the videos, aren't you worried about birds of prey? No, we're in a wooded area. The eagles and the owls and stuff, they can't get enough speed to swoop down and pick one up and away we go. That doesn't happen in my area. I'm more worried about the prey on the ground. Possums, raccoons, those sorts of prey. So, you live and learn, Tim, right?
It's great. Yeah, I'm jealous. I'm jealous.
If you come, I'll get you 12 dozen, or no, 1 dozen for free.
You said it. That's locked in now. 144
eggs. You get them for free.
No, that's great.
Well, the kids are going to sell them by the road. $5 a dozen.
That's expensive.
Is it?
Well, I guess not for, free range, organic, all that stuff. Are they organically fed?
Yeah, like we give them just leftovers. Nice. Like last night they had pancakes and toast.
Very nutritious, yeah.
Oh, and then they eat worms and stuff and bugs. Oh, they're well fed. But $5 for 12, I think, is the going rate.
That's fine.
All right, should we get into the hockey?
Let's do.
Who's this episode brought to you by, Tim?
This episode is brought to you by Bet365, the proud sponsor of Dropping the Gloves. I combined partner and sponsor.
I almost did The Rock when I said, who's the sponsor of this game? And you started to say, it doesn't matter who the spot I did. All right.
Yeah. Go ahead. Bet365. Open an account with Bet365 today. Bet on a huge range of markets. So whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. Use code HockeyCA, HockeyCA, all caps if they ask you. It's national. It's international. It's all over the world. It's not just Canada. HockeyCA, Bet365. Check it out.
Check it out, and let's get into the games. There was some fun. It's nice. I'm glad the second round is upon us. The first round, kind of a dud. Second round has been very exciting. Lots of overtime games, lots of blowouts, lots of comebacks. Just kind of any type of hockey that you like, it's being played. Physical hockey, there's been fights, there's been hitting, there's been controversy. It's definitely living up to the billing and making up for just a very average first round that everybody thought was going to be fantastic. But we can't talk about the teams in the playoffs right now because the Toronto Maple Leafs are still in the news. They never go away. Always and forever. Must be about them. They're narcissistic. They're annoying. And they're terrible at hockey. So I don't know why we keep just talking about it, but we have to. The worst kept secret in the world happened. Sheldon Keefe got fired. Who knew? Everybody knew. The big surprise was no one else got gassed. He was the only one so far who's been let go. Thursday morning, they released a statement, blah, blah, blah. Thank you for being here, Sheldon. Fantastic. We hope you all the best. All that crap. He's gone. He released a Twitter video standing on water, apparently. He's Jesus. I really enjoyed my time with Toronto. Thanks, everybody. It got me thinking when I was watching the video, why do we care? Coaches get fired all the time. Every year, how many coaches have been fired this year? Do they release a statement to their fans?
It's been 18 since the end of last season.
Well, who the hell cares that Sheldon Keefe got fired then?
Because it's Toronto.
But that's the thing. So he got fired. The bigger thing is who's going to be the replacement. Rumors are swirling already. Craig Berube, who also got fired from St. Louis earlier this season, mid-season, he's going to be the replacement. He's going to bring a hard-nosed, iron-fist work ethic to the Toronto Maple Leafs that they haven't seen since Babcock. Very similar type coach, except Babcock might, you know, do some things in the locker room that nobody likes. Give me your phone. Let me look at what you're doing there on Twitter. But that's the report. Other names, you know, floating around. Gerard Gallant, Coach Q, if he ever gets eligible. Bettman lets him coach in the NHL again. He might be on the market. But when it comes to coaching prospects for the Toronto Maple Leafs, it's a who's who have already coached in the NHL. And if you've already coached in the NHL and you're available, that means you've been fired. So another team doesn't want you. So you're getting a coach who's been fired and hated and ran out of town. So is it a good thing? Is it a bad thing? I don't know. The only one who maybe might not fit that bill is Coach Q, because he got let go because of what happened in Chicago. Florida had to let him go. Now he's available. Very good coach. Berube overstayed his welcome in St. Louis. They were struggling. They gassed him. Gallant, same thing for where was the last time he coached?
The Rangers.
He gets fired. So I don't know. Does any coach make sense for you with this team, Tim?
I've even heard Claude Julien's name floating around a little bit.
Oh, gosh.
You think he'd retire, right? I think Berube is kind of the sexy name right now. That's who most Toronto fans seem to want. He's got the championship, obviously. He's tough. He's hard nosed, but he's also like, he doesn't piss people off the same way like Babcock and Tortorella do. So he gets the most out of his players while still being a player's coach, which I think is a rare skill set. And he also just has that air of like, he played tough. He fought. He's just not someone you want to mess with. He logged, you know, 1,000 PIMs and 1,000 fights and all that. So he seemed like the right name for this group. But the question is, like, you fire Keefe, Shanahan is still going to be there. But the statement this morning was Shanahan's our president. He's a champion. It's like, well,
oh my gosh,
you know, it's been
not in Toronto. He's not 10 right. years.
So yeah. Is there any coach that can fix this team? No. Right. There's not one coach that can come in and say, hey, I don't know. I think Berube's better than Keefe, because the one thing that Keefe had going in his favor in his defense, he wasn't part of the boys club. He came up from coaching the Marlies, 4 or 5 years ago?
Yeah. Five years ago.
So Berube, I feel like, is the choice, but we're going to see more of the same next year unless something else changes.
Well, you need to change the makeup of the team. And I think that's being explored as well. Mitch Marner has been rumored to be on the trade market because he has one more year. He's a full no move clause and he's a UFA. So what do you do with him? If you can't sign him to another deal, you have to explore the trade market. we'll see what happens there. It's the thing with him. If you trade him, you're trading him to a team with the expectation that that team will sign him. That team is going to need $12.5 million to $14 million to sign a Mitch Marner, because he's going to want 8 years, $14 million. Like, this guy wants to get paid. He's been having fantastic regular seasons his whole career. You can lock him in for 100 points. He's a stud. He's a bona fide superstar in this league. So you have to find a good trade partner who also was willing to shell out Tim, prospect, first rounder, lots to get this kid. So it's not easy shopping a Mitch Marner. Yeah, a lot of teams will kick the tires. But when it comes to pay the piper, who's going to want to pony up that much money and prospects and then have to turn around and sign this guy, who, by the way, has only won one playoff series ever in his life? Like, he's not going to be the guy who's going to take your team to the promised land. He's a secondary player. He's not the guy you can lean on. And when you pay a person $14 million a year, you kind of want to be that guy, right? You want him to be the McKinnon. You want him to be the Kucherov. We need to win. Go and help us win. Go and lead us to victory. Marner shrinks in big situations. He doesn't want to do the hard things. And it's proven. This isn't just me throwing ideas at the wall and see what sticks. This is proven fact. This guy doesn't produce in the playoffs. Very good regular season player. But we'll see what happens. Going back to the Leafs, if they don't get rid of Marner and they keep him, Berube's the new coach, and they have another season of failure where they make the playoffs, lose in the first round, then does Shanahan go? At what point do you fire this guy? Because I'm annoyed that he's still there. I really am. He has done absolutely nothing with this organization. Yes, he drafted fairly well. He had high draft picks. He brings in Marner, Nylander, Matthews in three straight years. And then what? Like, I just, it bothers me. It really does. For some reason, it irks me. I don't want to spend too much more time on this. Last thing I want to say. Can they call Craig Berube Chief? That's his nickname. It's not politically correct, especially in Toronto. They're very, very aware of labels and just, you know, things that might upset people. Chief is a name that is in reference to his Native American heritage. Is that okay, Tim?
He is Native American?
Oh, yeah. That's why they call him Chief.
Does he like the name Chief?
Yeah.
Then who's upset about that?
What if there's someone there that hurts their feelings?
Okay. I see where you're going with this. Okay. Yeah, I think it's fine. Thank you. Okay. Thanks for asking.
It's something we need to actually talk about because it's a big deal, especially in Toronto.
I appreciate that.
They've got so soft in Toronto. Oh, my goodness. You can't do or say anything there. Let's get really into the politics of this because it's just...
Wait, before we move on, sticking with Keith for a second, some of the teams, there's a lot of interest in him already. And he said in his little clip that he was going to, you know, take some time off with his family. I think he's still going to be paid for the next 2 years by Toronto. And he hasn't even kicked in yet, his extension. So he's making,
full,
I think,
salary.
$4 million a year. Is that right?
I don't know. I tried to look for it. I couldn't find it. Yeah.
I think that's the number I saw. Someone could correct me if I'm wrong. But Pierre LeBrun said the Devils are interested in talking to him. Elliot Friedman said the Winnipeg Jets are. And so he's going to have a job if he wants it. Do you see either of those teams making sense, or do you think he takes some time off?
I think the Devils would be a nice choice. They're coming off of Lindy Ruff, who's old school as they come. The players would welcome a Sheldon Keefe. They got some young talent, some skill guys. He could, you know, you could help that team. Keefe is a good coach. I think he's more of an AHL coach. And that means he's good at developing players. He's good at just molding talent. He's good at growing players to get to the NHL. I don't think he's a guy who can control a room. I don't think he's a guy who can really
have fun out there.
Just grab a team and control it and work it and be the game manager. I don't think he's that guy, but I could be wrong. Toronto just could be uncoachable, but I think he'd be good in New Jersey, excuse me.
There was this great clip floating around yesterday of Jumbo was in the room. So what was that, 2-3 years ago?
Yeah.
But he was talking about one of those behind the scenes TV shows. And he said, our problem right now is we can't score when scoring is getting more difficult. He worded it better, but he was like, he knows the problem. He's like, when the series goes on, when it's late in the game, when it's the hardest to score a goal, that's when we stop scoring goals. And it's way oversimplified, but that's exactly what it is. And he's very aware of that. He just wasn't the guy to get him across that bridge. So we'll see if the next guy is.
And that's 3 years ago. And that's putting your players in a position of success and knowing how to do that. It's hard when you need a goal. There's 4 minutes left.
You know who's good with that?
It's a harder. Who?
The Panthers. Kachuk.
Oh, my gosh.
Just not even transitioning, because that's not even next on the agenda. But those two guys, like that, and I would even throw Reinhardt. Those guys score. The more difficult it is, the more likely they're going to score. That's what it seems like.
Well, let's talk about that series. They played game two last night, and lo and behold, Boston Bruins took game one 5-1. They dominated. They played very, very well. It was a completely different game. Florida comes in. They win 6-1. They dominate the game, start to finish, in every facet of this game. And Jeremy Swayman got pulled after giving up four, I want to say. But I will say this. I will go on record. None of the four were his fault. He still played really, really strong, made lights out saves in the first period to keep this team in the game on Tarasenko. I think Barkov had a couple really great A chances, and then Swayman was playing fantastic hockey. I feel like he got pulled just to, you know, rest him up. He's been playing a lot of hockey until the next game. He is their goalie going forward in my eyes. I don't think Allmark sees the net to start a game ever again. But let's talk about the game. What was the big problem here for the Bruins? It's hard to go from a 5-1 win to a 6-1 loss, Tim.
Well, you know what? They actually did win the first period. Not only 1-0 mm-hmm. was the score, but the ice was tilted. They looked like it was going to be a Marchand-type night. That hit that he threw on Kachuk was just absolutely gorgeous. And it was like, and it should have been 2 or 3 goals. And the game would have changed completely. They only got one. Bobrovsky, some of them were bad bounces that didn't go our way, but Bobrovsky played really well. And being down only 1-0 after the first was a win for Florida. And they turned the gas up in the second period, and everything was going their way. It was just... Swayman let up 3 in the second. It's 3-1. One of them with like 1.4 seconds left.
That was a backbreaker. That's the one there when they have the offensive zone faceoff. They go low to high, and Montour scored it, I think. That was a backbreaker.
That was tough. But yeah, to your point, none of these were Swayman's fault. But when he let up one early in the fourth goal, and they pulled him. And Monty, even you don't know exactly what he said, but Monty stopped him before he went down the hallway, and he talked to him. And you know what he was like? You're still a guy. You're coming in next game. We just want to give you a break and whatever. A lot of credit to Florida. I think a couple of things that are frustrating for me as a Bruins fan is, one, the too many men in the ice penalty. They got their fifth one of the playoffs in that game. The rest of the league, at that point, the rest of the league combined had 4. Colorado got another one last night, so now it's 5. So there's been 10 too many men in the ice penalties, and 5 of them belong to Boston.
That's coaching.
That's what I was going to say. Like, 1 or even 2 is like, you can watch the play and say the players, he jumped on too early, the wrong guy jumped on, whatever. 5 of them, that's coaching. I don't know what leads to that, but that's inexcusable to me.
Well, it's a coach trying to line match, and he's waiting and waiting and waiting until he sees who's out with Florida. Then he shouts out a guy, and it's just too late. Someone's already jumped, and nobody knows who's going on or who's coming off. So it's just a lot of confusion. You need a boss general who, A, is confident in the lines they throw out. It's hard to line match when you're on the road, and you get that information out there early. Because it's chaotic in the playoffs. You're screaming. You're watching the game. You're not paying attention to the coach. And, you know, it happens fast. The next thing you know, two guys jump on, or nobody jumps on, and two guys try to correct. It's too many men. So it's unfortunate. They have to clean that up. You can't keep giving Florida power plays and expect them not to score. I know they haven't been capitalizing on these penalties. What, they have one power play goal last game? They got a shorthanded goal for Pete's sake. That's another issue we should talk about. But all in all, Tim, this is... It's the Florida Panthers hockey that we expect them to do. They've been doing it for the last 2-3 years. They punch you in the face. They score a goal. They chirp you. I think this series is playing right into their favor. I know Boston tried to play the bully versus Toronto. That was the game they had to play. Toronto's a fast skill game. You want to get him. You want to punch him in the face. You want to hit him. You want to slow him up. I don't think you do that with Florida. I don't think you should do that with Florida. I think you have to stay out of the junk. This is exactly how the Florida Panthers want to play. You notice Kachuk and Montour and all these guys after they score? Kachuk giving Charlie Coyle the business after they got the third or second goal. This is how they play. They want to take it to the alley. They want a street fight. This is exactly the game the Florida Panthers played last year when they made the Stanley Cup Finals, and they're doing it again this year. Boston's got to stay out of the junk if they have any chance of even winning a game in the series anymore.
They're a cocky bunch too. Like, they're feathers, and credit to them. Like, they back it up. The only thing that makes me nervous is Monty's switching up the lines again tonight, where he took Parker Weatherspoon out of the lineup because Andrew Peak is healthy again, and he's keeping Forbert in. He switched another couple of guys. Connor Geeky's centering the top line between Zacha and Pasternak now.
Yeah.
We get to the point in the series, this happened in Toronto and it happened in Florida last year, where after a couple of games in the doesn't go our way, and he just starts getting nervous and overthinking it, and I don't like that, but we'll see. But before
one thing I did like about this game, Florida was winning, it was getting out of hand. David Pastrnak. Let's talk about this. The big fight versus Matthew Tkachuk. It wasn't a great fight. Didn't have to be. This is what you call leadership. This is what you call setting the tone. This is what you call when a guy sees something happening to his team and he doesn't like the way it's going. His team was struggling. Like you said, Florida's getting cocky. They have an attitude. They're peacocking out there. They're scoring goals. They're hitting. Everything's going good. Pastrnak sees this. He takes a coincidence with Matthew Tkachuk. Matthew Tkachuk is light years out of his weight class. Pasta doesn't fight. I even breathed on him in a game one time, and he's like, terrified me. There's a clip of him talking about it to somebody. He's like, he scared me. I didn't want to even go on the ice with John after that. He's not a fighter. In the penalty box, he goes, we're fighting to Matthew Tkachuk. To Matthew Tkachuk. Not the toughest guy in the world, but guy knows how to throw him. Goes to the bench. Talks to the coach. Doesn't ask him. He goes, I'm fighting this guy. Just giving you a heads up. So if he goes on the ice, I want to go on the ice. And the coach is like, oh, yeah, let's go. Like, this is good for our team. Even he knows our team is struggling. We need some momentum. We need to flip the script. Panthers are bullying us right now. Pasta goes out and he drops him right away. I loved it. What that does for your team, it sets the bar for every other player. Every other guy on that bench sees your best player go out there and drop in the mitts with a tough cat, pun intended, Florida Panthers. And he's doing it for the team. He's doing it to make a stand. This is it. We're done. We're not going to take it anymore. Every other guy sees that and they go, shoot, we got to go. If he's going to do it, then I have to do it. Because that's our 60 goal scorer. He shouldn't be fighting. Maybe I should be fighting. What's going on here? You have to look at yourself in the mirror and say, what can I do? If David Stinkin' Pastrnak's fighting Matthew Tkachuk, what do I have to do? What is Trent Frederick doing? What is JVR going to do? What is Brazo? We have to start playing better so he doesn't have to fight. So I absolutely loved it. And he lost a fight, you know, and then Tkachuk gets him some cheap ones on the ground, a little rat like he is.
Didn't like that.
But the end of this, yes, he lost a fight. He's going to end up winning the war because that sends a reverberating message through the whole locker room. We're not going to do this. This isn't going to happen again. It happened last year where they ran over us and beat us 3 games in a row. Not this year. This is my team now. We don't have that selfish prick Bergeron losing us the series. This is my team now. So I loved it. What do you think, Tim?
Yeah, someone was texting me last night being like, why did Pasta lose the fight? It's so embarrassing. I'm like, it doesn't matter what he lost. It does not matter. The fact that he fought means everything. And it's going to inspire the rest of the team. It's going to set the tone for game three. Does not matter. And he didn't get hurt. That was the most important thing. You drop the gloves. You don't get hurt. That's all you needed from him in that moment. And I love that he did it. And I love that little interaction between him and Monty. He's like, you want to do this? And he's like, yeah. And he goes, he kind of smirks. He's like, yeah, go ahead. And then he looks over at his assistant coach, Chris Kelly, and he's just like, here we go. I loved it. And I love that Pasta was the one that initiated it and went for it. So good for him. We'll see if it translated into something in game three tonight. But not pretty much what I expected as a comeback for Florida in game two.
And then another major question is, what's going on with Charlie McAvoy?
I think he has some kind of wrist injury or something. He's not putting a whole ton behind the puck. He's like positioning still there. He's still able to be physical and everything, but like he's turning pucks over. And he's not putting a lot on his passes and he's not shooting it. He's clearly not healthy. Yeah. You watch him. It's the stick handling. It's handling the puck that's hurting him. And, you know, you don't take him out of the lineup, right? But at the same time, like he's turning the puck over. He's costing. He's been the reason for multiple goals against. He's still your best defenseman, but so far this playoffs, I think it's probably been Carlo has been your number one. He's played the best. He hasn't logged the most minutes, but he's played the best. And then Hampus and McAvoy are kind of one and two, I think. So I don't know. I saw a headline this morning that he's healthy. He's back in the lineup. Not that he was ever came out, but he's expected to play tonight. So we'll see.
Well, the fact that they say that leads you to believe that something is wrong. You don't say someone's healthy when he's healthy. So there's something wrong. He's obviously laboring. All right, let's stay out east. New York, Carolina, they finished up game three last night. Same old, same old. Can't beat these New York Rangers. They're unstoppable. 7-0 now in these playoffs. They did it this time in overtime. Artemi Panarin scored the overtime winner just like a minute 43 into overtime. A beautiful tip. That guy's got some sick hands. There were some great tips. A better tip was JT Miller. Oh, did you see that tip versus Colorado on the side of the net? I think it was goal three to make it 4-3. Edmonton. We'll get to that series in a second, but my, oh my, I watched that over and over again on replay. This is an incredible tip, but Panarin wins it in overtime. Carolina switches goaltenders for this game three. Freddie Anderson didn't play terrible the first two games, didn't play great. They bring in Kochetkov. Didn't really play great. Didn't really play terrible. A couple good saves. A couple, you know, maybe. Didn't play. No, he was just a very forgettable game for him.
I thought he played great. The problem was the Rangers are just so good. You know what I mean? Like, he made some big saves, and he comes in kind of cold after. I don't think he played any games in the first round. So
no.
All things considered, I think he was fine. But yeah, the Rangers are just so good. This has more.
You think they played good, the Rangers?
Yeah. John, they're 7-0 now. You know what I mean?
Well, I don't think they played that good. I think Carolina should have won the game. There's one reason why they didn't. And his name is Igor.
Yeah, but there's a lot of, I know if you roll your eyes at advanced stats, but like puck possession time and offensive zone, all that stuff tilts the Rangers' way. Because there's a lot of conversations about, oh, the Carolina did everything right but win the game. It's like, well, no, not if you dig a little bit deeper. So we'll see. But I thought this is Rangers' game for sure.
Well, it was a very exciting game. Carolina finally gets on the board. Jake Guentzel scores the first goal, and then lo and behold, they get a power play. And this is a common theme with the Rangers special teams. Everybody talks about their power plays very, very good, and rightfully so. They're clipping along at almost 35%, 34.5%. They seem to score a power play goal every single game. Well, they didn't get a power play goal this game. They got a shorthanded goal. Chris Kreider blocks Brent Burns' shot, gets up off the ice, beats Burnsy down the ice, gets a nice pass from Zibanejad, scores it between Kochetkov's legs, ties the game 1-1. Those little things, the margin of error in the playoffs, Tim, is so thin, paper thin. Every play is just so important, and especially when you're on the special teams, power play, penalty kill, whatever it may be, you have to, A, if you're Carolina, try to score a goal. If you give up a goal and you're on the power play, that stings. That hurts so, so much. It gives the Rangers so much energy, and then it just kills your team. If you're a guy on the bench watching these guys, you're like, come on, you guys, I draw a penalty, your power play goes out, and you give up a goal. What are we doing here? We might as well just rescind the penalty. That was huge for the New York Rangers. And Chris Kreider, well, what more can you say about this guy? Isn't he, like, fantastic? He scored 60 goals last year. Everybody forgets. He's just very forgettable. He's incredible. He does everything good. He's got lightning speed. Man, oh, man. He's the most just forgettable, forgotten goal scorer, I think, in league history. Like, the guy's, he's got to have like something crazy, like 300 goals, 400 goals, right? Because he just scores so much every single season.
Yeah, he was so good. And the Rangers power play is at 34.5%, which is about third in the league. I think Edmonton's 47. I forget who's second, but they're short. Like, so the special teams, we talked about that all week, how important the special teams is. 34.5%, excellent power play. Their penalty kill, they scored last night. In the playoffs, they've been down shorthanded 28 times. And in those 28 opportunities, they've outscored the opposition 3-2. They've scored more shorthanded goals than they've allowed power play goals, which is just outstanding. And a huge part of that has to do with not only their team, but Shesterkin. When he's playing like this, we talk about Jeremy Swayman, but Igor Shesterkin is just on another level right now. And we were critical of him in the past, and he's kind of waiting for him to take that next step, because he's been sort of pedestrian in the past, but now he's looking just incredible, and the Rangers are looking unbeatable.
Well, he's the reason why they're unbeatable. What do you have, 47 shots, 45 saves last game? He played absolutely lights out, and they weren't, you know, perimeter shots. Some of them were. A lot of them were really great A chances, redirections, rebounds. The guy's just so incredibly good. We talked about it last show. He makes just difficult saves look very easy, so you don't think he's doing that much work, but boy, he anticipates. He's so incredibly good. Will they lose? I don't know, Tim. You're 7-0. What happened to the last? Did you already say this? The last team that was 7-0.
Yeah. So they're the 12th team in NHL history to begin a season, but postseason 7-0. Eight of the former 11 went on to win the Stanley Cup, including the 1994 Rangers, who everyone's comparing this team to 30 years ago. There's a lot of similarities. So pretty, you know, what they're doing is historic, and there's a good chance they keep this going.
Yeah, I agree. I think I don't know if they get the sweep in Carolina. That would be incredible if they got a sweep, because you know, well, I don't know this, but I think Boston, Florida is going to go a long time. So is it good to sweep and sit there for a week? Maybe. They've had a lot of time off even before the first series when they swept Washington. So, all right, let's move out west. Dallas, Colorado. Another great game. So far, these guys are 2-for-2 in the games. Very exciting. Two really good teams. Very, very, very good teams. And the script held true again for this game. Dallas jumps out to a big lead, 4-0 after two. Thanks to Rupe Hintz, Tim. He finally showed up. What did he do this game?
He had a goal and 4 points. And I would even say Heiskanen also stepped up big time. Yep. He kind of joked about Makar dominating game one. Heiskanen had 2 goals. Huge game for Dallas because you came back from being down 2-0 at home against Vegas. It's really hard to come back once. To do it twice is just almost impossible. So winning that game 2 at home was really good. You got the momentum heading back to Colorado now. So really, really big for them. And for me, who had Dallas in the finals, I was glad to see it.
No, they looked great. And it's concerning, though. You go up 4-0, all the momentum, you're at home, the place is rocking, everything's going good. You get the shorthanded goal to end the second period. It's fantastic. Then all of a sudden, the third period starts. Colorado gets one. I think it was not Miles Wood, but his line mate gets one. Then they get another one. Then they get another one on a pulled goalie. And the goalie's still pulled. Then they get a grade A chance right in the front. I think it was Casey Middlestead who had a shot, redirection, huge save by Jake Oettinger. And obviously Dallas goes down and they score the empty netter. But does it make you nervous watching this game? Both games, I'm just scratching my head. I don't know which team I would rather be moving forward for games 3+. Do you want to be the Dallas Stars who jump out to an early lead just to collapse and not play the third period and have this other team come back and just almost win the game? You're up 4-0 and you almost lose. Down 3, up 3-0, lose the game before. Or do you want to be Colorado, giving up 7 straight goals to start both games, having to come back, having fortitude, yes, but just not starting any game on time? Terrible first period, terrible second period last game. Which team would you rather be, Tim? The one that gets the lead or the one that comes back?
I'm rooting for Dallas in this series, but the way you just described it, I'd rather be Colorado because I know that I have the offense in place. Like I can trust these guys to score in bunches when they need to. And not only score, but like we talked about earlier, score when it gets more difficult to score, because this is a group that's capable of that. The McKinnons, Nichushkin, Makar, all that. So of those two scenarios, like the way you painted it, I would say Colorado. But either way, they're both, concerning. But in a way, they're also both uplifting, just the fact they are able to do this. And Dallas is able to hang on to a win, and Colorado's been able to come back multiple times in this postseason. So two stacked teams. I don't know. It's tough that, comparing this game to some of the ones out east, it seems like the teams out west are just playing at another level. Like the speed and the intensity, and I think there's certain things that eastern teams have that the western teams don't, but there's I would just say speed to this game that just seems unmatched right now.
Yeah, I agree. And it's skill all over the ice. It's very fun to watch, whether it's a McKinnon. We talk about him a lot. Rantanen, Nichushkin's playing fantastic, but Tyler Seguin's playing great hockey. Joe Pavelski showed up this game. Jamie Benn's playing really good. He's doing all the hard things. Screening the goalie when Heiskanen gets his second goal, a fantastic screen. They're all playing really, really good. What makes me nervous is, two things. The Dallas Stars, they have an advantage in net. Jake Oettinger, they tilt in their favor a little bit. The back end for the Dallas Stars makes me incredibly nervous, and I'll tell you why. They've been leaning on 5 defensemen the whole playoffs. They haven't had Jani Hakanpää, so they have 6 defensemen playing, but Nils Lundqvist is averaging 4 minutes per game. The guy doesn't play. One game he played 1 minute. I'm serious, 1 minute all game. There's some games he gets 7 or 8 if they get a lead. He had a nice, assist last game.
Yeah.
Coaches don't trust him. Rightfully so. He's terrible in the D zone. So they're playing those 5 guys a lot. Ryan Suter is not young. What is he, 38? 37, 38? It's only the second round game, too, and you're already gassing your D-men. Harley and Heiskanen and Lindell and Tanev. You can't keep doing that. You cannot. Yes, you can get away with it for a couple games in the Stanley Cup Finals if you need to shorten the bench. This is round 2, second game, and you've been gassing these guys out already for a 7-game series in round 1 when you squeak by the Vegas Golden Knights. I don't know if they can hold up, Tim. That's a lot.
It is.
Ask these guys.
Yeah. Let me throw you a quick trivia question that you're going to love. Who leads the NHL in postseason goals in the 2000s?
Chris Kreider.
Nope. No. Come on.
I don't know. Tell me.
Joe Pavelski, 73. He's got more than Ovi and Crosby and Malkin and all those guys.
Well, you figure he played a ton with San Jose, and now he's got a ton with Dallas. You know what I was watching? One of their power plays. The luxury of their team. It's hard to find a good net front presence now in the NHL. It's just hard. No one wants to go in front of the net. Big bodies, you get punished. They have Jamie Benn to go in front of the net. And then they have the best high tip ever to play the game in Joe Pavelski. Like, imagine that if you're a defenseman. The goalie's screened, and you just have to shoot it within 5 feet of the net, and Pavs is going to tip it. Like, he... That's why their power play is so good. That guy's lights out. Yeah. It doesn't surprise me. Joe Pavelski. One of the good ones. All right. What are we going to talk about next, Tim? We're running a little late. It's already, you know, we've already been talking for a half. Too much chicken talk.
I know. I love it. Before we get into the final series, we're going to recap here. I want to talk real quick for a minute about AG1. It's a nutritional supplement that we take every day. I love it. Like I said, it's part of my morning routine. Even this morning, I was working for the first few hours of the day at this co-working space, and I'm watching people walk by. John's got the tincture of the vitamin D3K. I don't want to say it wrong, but I'm watching everyone walk by the area for the co-working, and they're drinking their coffees and they're drinking their energy drinks, and I'm drinking my AG1, and I'm judging everyone because I'm like, what are you guys doing for your health? Because I know what I'm doing, and it's delicious, it's tasty, it's good for me, it supports my immune health. I love it. I don't go a day without it. So I check it out every day.
I do too. And I still drink it. I take my little one a day shakes. I shake it up. It's fun. I do my D3, K2 vitamins. And I'm not a big vitamin guy. I'm not a big supplement guy. I never did. I never will be. But I feel good. I like it. And my farts are fantastic. So
okay,
it's like a double pronged. You can feel good. It supports your immune health. It boosts your energy. I look fantastic. I feel great. And I got one in the holster anytime I want, baby.
Okay.
You know?
Well, it's not an energy booster, but it creates more sustained energy, right?
That's what I meant. I feel good. I feel good. Get those
crashes in the afternoon. And if you want to take ownership of your health, it starts with AG1. Try AG1, get a free 1-year supply of vitamin D3, K2. That's the tincture that John's always doing. And 5 free AG1 travel packs with your first purchase. Exclusively at drinkag1.com/DTG. Drinkag1.com/DTG. Go check it out.
I think everybody probably already does, but if you use our link there, you get a little something, something, you know what I mean?
And so a little
something for your effort.
Go do it.
It's good. And why is it bad to talk about farts? I think they should market that. It's good.
If that's helping you, then great. Oh, all the power.
It's incredible. Have you been having any gas issues?
No. No.
Do you fart? I've never heard you fart.
And you won't.
Really? You're like a woman. You don't want to have people hear you fart?
You just let it rip in front of people you know?
Yeah, I do. I do.
Okay. Yeah, what do they call that when you gas them?
Crop dust them.
Crop dust them? Yeah.
But then I just stand there.
You wallow.
I go, it was me. Drink it in. All right, speaking of drinking it in, Edmonton, Vancouver. Game 2 was played. And we thought it was all the same. Edmonton comes back. They win game 1 versus Vancouver. Well, Edmonton was up 4-1 this game. I was ready to pack it in. Third period. Let's go to bed early. You know, this is getting late. Glad I didn't. Vancouver all of a sudden flipped a switch. And you know who it was led by?
Who?
Nikita Zadorov. Nikita Zadorov, friend of the show. There was rumors he was going to be traded at the end of the regular season. They got him midseason from Calgary. He wasn't really working out. He came on our show. As soon as he did our show, his play took off. But there were still people who were like, oh, well, maybe he's not a good fit here. We already have Ian Cole. We got Cardinal Soucy. We got Tyler Myers. Bigger dudes, Nikita Zadorov, maybe similar type player. Aren't they glad they didn't let him go? He's played 7 games. He's got 5 points, 25 hits. He's playing fantastic hockey, Tim. And in game 2 versus Edmonton, he looked great. Didn't he look great? I feel like he had changed the game. He's physical on Connor McDavid. Connor who? 0 shots last game. And I know I took a lot of heat because I said he only got 1 goal in the first series. I don't hear anybody saying much now. What's going on with Connor McDavid? 0 shots, 0 points last game. I'm worried. Something's wrong with Connor. And I'm serious. I know in the first round I was being a little stinker, trying to rile up the people. I'm serious now. Either something's wrong with him or Vancouver has his number, because when's the last time you heard that he didn't get any shots or no points?
He's never had a playoff game where he didn't have any point or shots before.
Never.
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 A lot of credit to them, but it's one game. He can easily come back and have 5 points tonight. You know what I mean?
Will he? I don't think he will.
going back to the game, so it was 4-1. It seemed like the game was over, just like Dallas, Colorado game one. Yep. It's like, I kind of have it on the background. I'm not watching anymore. Vancouver decided around the end of the second period that they weren't going to stand for it anymore. They scored four straight to win it in overtime. Game-winning goal from friend of the show, Connor Garland. Here's a cool stat that I saw. I didn't verify it, but I saw it on the internet, so I believe it. From the time that Vancouver's comeback started at the end of the second, so it's like 22 minutes total of time, Edmonton didn't get another shot on goal that entire time. The entire third period and part of the second. They scored four straight goals and didn't allow a single shot on net, which is just, it's crazy. It's outstanding. So yeah, good game for them. I didn't think they were capable of this, and I was totally wrong.
Well, even Edmonton's goals weren't great. Couple point shots by CC and Lindholm, and they got a power play goal from Hyman. And that's kind of it. Hyman had a terrible fourth goal that he scored on Silvas. That was an awful goal, should have never went in. And then Vancouver continued to take over the game. And it was everybody. You know, it wasn't just the first line or the second line. Everybody, Tim, was scoring goals. The D-men were jumping in. I mentioned Zadorov. He gets a goal. Connor Garland, his line was fantastic. Dakota Joshua gets him on the board early to kind of kickstart this with a beautiful play to Elias Lindholm. I like these Vancouver Canucks. And I don't know if I said it before we went on the air. I was like, don't sleep on Vancouver. I said, I want to change my pick. I like them. Didn't I say that before we went on the episode? Before Wednesday or Monday's episode, I think I want to change my pick to Vancouver. Don't you lie and say I didn't.
I don't remember that either way. But if that helps you, then sure.
This is going to be a good series. I think people were ready to anoint the Oilers just because of Silvas, and they lost Thatcher Demko and everything. Like, oh, we're going to, Western Conference Finals when we'll be tested with either Dallas or Colorado. Canucks look pretty good. Now they're going to Edmonton. They got to steal one there.
I was thinking, honestly, after that first period, I was like, I think Edmonton might sweep them. I think this is like, they're looking so good, but I was totally wrong on that.
Yeah, I'm happy that there's some series to pay attention to. It's fun. Yeah. Other than in New York, Carolina, everybody's going to be a nice long series, and that's what we need. You know what else is fun? I might have another job in the works. I know this podcast thing is going good. You know, I'm very excited for it, but I might have to quit because there is a new 3-on-3 league coming to North America. Steve Dangle must be a part of it, right? Because he broke the news. He has to have some angle on this. So they broke the news. There's a new 3-on-3. What's it called, Tim? Do you have any idea?
I don't think it has a name yet. Yeah. I don't know.
No one knows the cities. No one knows where it's going to be or how, but it's supposed to start this fall. They have some pretty good money to throw around, and it's going to be a strictly 3-on-3 league, much like the big three Ice Cube did for basketball. They're trying to do that for hockey. I would imagine the teams are going to be in Canada. If I was a betting man, maybe the big markets in the USA, but if you're smart, you keep it in Canada. Travel's easy. Lots of hockey players make it work that way, but we'll see how it goes. But I'm the best 3-on-3 planet player on earth. Everybody knows that.
Undefeated, right?
Undefeated. And if you don't remember, I was named MVP and there were some pretty good players around. Pretty good players around. And they're still playing in the NHL. Doughty was there, Huberto, Gaudreau, Pavelski,
Burns.
Yeah. So I'm just saying, I might leave.
If this league is what it's going to be, if it turns out to be the way that it's being reported by Dangle and others, like, it's very interesting. Because that's not a small chunk of change. You know, about a third of the NHL salary cap is like, for a 3-on-3 league. So what are you going to carry? 5-6 guys? You know what I mean? A couple goalies?
I didn't tell them how much money they're spending. You got to let them know.
Oh, the salary cap is $30 million. Yeah. So,
for the league.
Huh?
For the league, not for each team.
Oh, I don't know. But either way, like, there's still a lot of money. You're going to see, I think at first, you know how like when the international tournaments come around and guys that aren't NHL, I would say they're not part of the NHL show up, but they used to be. Where you're like, oh yeah, David Warsawski. I forgot about him. He's playing for Team USA in China or whatever. It's going to be those types of names at first. Guys that are just an applicator's name will pop up and you're like, oh yeah, yeah, yeah. I wonder what he was doing. But eventually, like, if this gets more money, and I've heard that it's being compared to that live golf thing, like outside money from Saudi Arabia or other places, there could be a lot more money poured into this. And you might see like guys leaving the NHL. We'll see. I don't think it's going to happen.
Let's just pump the tires here.
I'm just reporting what I'm seeing, but I wonder if what Bettman's reaction to this is going to be.
He doesn't care.
You don't think he cares? He's not threatened by that?
No, no. I don't think the money's there. It's not like golf is a huge, you know, worldwide game. And hockey is somewhat. I don't think it's that big of a deal. It'll be fun. But I'm not too worried. I'm not going to. I'm old and slow. I'm not playing in it, but I'll be coach. Be coach. All right. Predictions for tonight, Tim. Then we'll get out of here. We got two games. Big game, both of them. They're both tied 1-1. Boston, Florida. Who do you got?
Yeah, I'm going to go with Florida tonight.
Gosh, you're just such why?
You're so sad.
You pick Florida every game.
I think we'll split, but I think Florida wins tonight. Boston win game four before we go back.
Yeah. Okay, so Boston will win tonight, then you'll pick Florida game four to keep your streak alive of picking Florida every game.
I think Florida either way.
And then Edmonton, Vancouver.
Edmonton. I can't see that happening again. So
wow, you were just negative Nancy. I'm going the opposite of you. I'm going the underdog both teams. Boston Bruins will right the ship at home. Jeremy Swayman back in net, gonna play great. Vancouver Canucks gonna continue the momentum. They have Stuart Skinner's number. I think they're gonna really build on that. And Connor McDavid. Something's wrong with him. I think he maybe he's hit his peak. Okay. He's starting to regress. Something's not right. Him and Charlie McAvoy. There's some injury issue with both of them that they're not telling us, but
Pettersson too.
So Pettersson, I just think there's something going on right now, and we gotta call a spade a spade. He's not playing great. All right, everybody. Have a good weekend. Watch some hockey, have some fun. Talk to everybody on Monday.
Thanks for listening to Dropping the Gloves with John Scott, a member of the Nation Network of Podcasts. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts from to never miss an episode.